This podcast is brought to you by Knowledge at Wharton. For more information, please visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.
One year ago, a memo issued by U.S. Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates told prosecutors to focus on holding individuals accountable in cases of corporate wrongdoing, with companies providing all relevant information on those people if they want to receive credit against their case as it proceeds. Fast forward a year, and we've seen instances of the government going after individuals in various cases, but it's also seemed like there have been situations where aggressive prosecutions haven't occurred. So what is the state of prosecution against corporate entities in these types of cases? It doesn't always appear to be working from the outside. Stephanie Resnick is a partner at Fox Rothschild here in the city of Philadelphia, and she joins us here in the studio. Nice to meet you. Thank you for coming in.
Good morning.
Thank you. Let's go back, I guess, and start with the Yates memo. And for those people that didn't know what it was all about, kind of go into what exactly it was trying to do.
Well, about a year ago, Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates issued what's commonly known as the Yates Memo, seemingly in an effort to stem criticism of the DOJ and others, potentially defining a new operational framework for holding individuals accountable. And essentially, as you referenced before, the key point in the Yates memo is that a company, in order to be eligible for any cooperation credit, the company must provide to the DOJ all relevant facts about the individuals involved in the corporate misconduct. Both criminal and civil corporate investigations should focus on individuals from the inception of the investigation. And absent extraordinary circumstances, there's not going to be a corporate resolution that is in some way going to exculpate the individuals. So what you're seeing from the Yates memo is really a position change that there will be individual accountability, that officers and directors are going to be held accountable for mm-hmm. their conduct. So that, in essence, is the Yates memo.
I guess the interesting part about this is we're at a time where this is drawing more and more attention, and especially it's drawing attention in Congress. We've seen a couple of cases in the last week where companies have had to come in front of Congress to kind of explain their actions. So I guess this kind of it links to what the Yates memo was trying to do, correct?
Absolutely. There is definitely increased focus and attention by, for instance, Senator Warren, by Bernie Sanders, on holding individuals accountable for their conduct within the corporate setting.
How effective, then, has it been, do you think, in the first year since that memo was sent out?
It's still evolving. However, I do think what it does is it sets forth a consistent position within the Department of Justice to focus on individuals. And while we haven't seen a great number of cases emanating from this Yates memo, we have seen some differences. For instance, there was a recent case involving a pharmaceutical company in which not only the former president was indicted, but also low-level or mid-level district managers were also indicted for their conduct. Prior to the Yates memo, you probably would not have seen any type of focus or effort on the mid-manager level, the lower level. But in this case, there were something like five indictments that were individually focused.
Why was it that it took this memo to really start this ball rolling? I mean, why hadn't this been happening realistically on a more consistent basis in the past, especially considering what this country went through with the recession and the housing bubble and the banking issues? I mean, it certainly there would seem to be enough entities out there that you could prosecute.
Well, that's a great question. And I think if you were asking that question to the DOJ, they would take the position that they were always focused on individuals and right. That was always a concentration on their part. However, I think that there has been a lot more pressure to go after individuals at this time, the individual directors and officers. And so it's really heavy on their mind in terms of any type of criminal or even civil prosecution. You know, one of the things that is worrisome with regard to the Yates memo is that it effectively pits an employee against the company. Yeah. And there are numerous ramifications to that, including legal ramifications, cost ramifications, and insurance ramifications.
Which end up being what?
Well, what's going to happen and what we've seen is that from very, very early on in the investigation, individuals in the company are asking for, first of all, their own attorneys.
Right.
There is less of a unified corporate approach because from the individual's standpoint, they have their own individual needs, and they have to make sure they're
not
they have to make sure they're not a target of an investigation. From the company perspective, it's in their best interest to provide all relevant facts,
right.
And those are the words that are used in the Yates memo regarding any wrongdoing, regarding any individual, et cetera. So you basically have a conflict of interest there within the context of the company,
right.
And the company's interest. That can erode insurance. You know, typically D&O carriers indemnify their officers and directors. But if you're having, you know, various individuals who are even interviewed, you could have multiple set of counsel, which can erode a deductible very quickly.
Yeah.
And those sorts of things.
So is this part of the reason why we're hearing the term whistleblower more and more in our vernacular here in the U.S.?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
We are joined here in the studio by Stephanie Resnick, who's a partner at Fox Rothschild here in Philadelphia. We're talking about a one-year anniversary of sorts of something called the Yates Memo, which looked to try and prosecute more individuals in cases of corporate wrongdoing. Your comments are welcome at 844-WHARTON, 844-942-7866. If you'd like to join in, or if you can't get to your phone, you're more than welcome to send us a comment via Twitter, either at BizRadio111 or my Twitter account, which is at DanLoney21. What is interesting, I guess, is that, and kind of referring back to, you know, what has gone on in Congress the last week or so, we continue to see these types of instances pop up. And, you know, we went through a period of time after the recession where with Dodd-Frank and various other pieces of legislation that you thought that we were going to see these types of cases diminish a little bit, yet seemingly entities like the DOJ, entities like the Attorney General's office, law firms across the United States are as busy as ever with these types of things. Is this something that unfortunately is going to continue to be kind of the norm?
Well, we are seeing an increased concentration and focus on the individuals and individual accountability. So I would say, yes, that we are going to have to deal with the issues that come along with the Yates memo. And as the ramifications of the Yates memo are evolving, again, mm-hmm. we have seen some examples, but not a plethora of examples, that this is going to be very concerning to officers and directors. At the same time, there are needs for individual accountability. So mm-hmm. it's really a balancing act.
And you wrote an article for the Philadelphia Business Journal a little while back that talked about how this is kind of changing the thinking within boards of directors and, you know, certain people that may not want to join a board of director because of the potential liability that they may face in the case of something like this happening.
Yeah, particularly in a publicly traded company where there is a lot at stake. Typically, you have officers and directors who are just at the highest level in terms of their background and experience. And, you know, when there are decisions that are being made that may or may not be improper, but there's a heightened scrutiny by the government and the government agencies. You know, you have to wonder, do I really want to get involved in this? Do I really want to participate at that level?
One of the other considerations I know we've talked about on the show in other cases is that at times it's hard to kind of connect the dots up the chain to actually see who knew what and how far, you know, this approach actually happens within a corporate entity. Is that one of the concerns maybe why the government, or a factor why the government hadn't prosecuted more individuals in the past?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And now there's really a clear roadmap of where to go. And again, by pitting individuals against the company, you're going to get more pressure on the company side to, quote, dime on the employees. They have more of an incentive to essentially give this information to the government on a platter. And again, the employees have more incentive to say, well, where do I fit in this?
One of the other instances we actually talked about before you came on, and I was interested in seeing if this fell into that category, and you agreed, was what's ongoing with FIFA, the governing body of soccer around the world, and the fact that, you know, the U.S. government had worked with other entities to try and bring some of these people that were involved in these corruption cases, instances, into justice, or at least getting them ready to go into court here in the United States. So, you know, this is an instance where we're seeing, in some respects, the Yates memo really kind of take that play, correct?
Yeah, I think that you're going to see a number of examples of whether, you know, these are ramifications of the Yates memo directly or whether they're indirect. But you are going to see more and more of this. You know, it's very interesting because there is a recent healthcare fraud case where a case was brought against the founder, owner, and CEO of a company in January of 2016. And although allegations arose in the context of a civil action, the case is illustrative of what happens in the Yates environment. Essentially, they went after an individual, and it resulted in a very, very substantial civil settlement. And, you know, you wonder, is this something that would have occurred prior to Yates?
Right.
It's questionable.
Is this a movement that, I mean, we talk about it in the scope of the United States, but is this a movement that is one that it maybe even has legs globally, other entities around the globe? I say that because the story was out this morning about the traitor at Societe Generale in France, where, you know, he was potentially responsible originally through a court finding of upwards of like $5 billion that, you know, had been mishandled. And the court today, you know, reduced that to $1 million. So that's a big difference. But again, you're going after the individual that was involved in this case.
Yeah, it's too soon to tell, but that would be the natural evolution of it.
What's then the expectation then? We will see obviously more push by the DOJ, by the Attorney General's office, when these instances come up to really aggressively pursue prosecutions against individuals rather than, you know, just kind of play the role of taking the fine and going home.
Correct. And I think what you're going to see are more settlements by individuals as well as settlements that involve the company. So you're going to see, you know, more of a financial reward for their efforts.
But for the individual, for them specifically, they would be more willing to settle just to try and alleviate some of the potential fine and or jail time that they may be looking at, correct?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
It really would depend on the situation. There may be individuals who don't, for instance, want to cooperate. There may be individuals who don't want to settle, that they don't believe that they did anything wrong. And that, you know, is grounds for conflict situations because the company may think that they did. So It really depends on the individual. It depends on the legal advice that the individual is getting. You know, when you put many lawyers in a room, you're going to get a lot of different opinions. And now with the Yates memo and the early investigations, you're going to get more lawyers quicker. And that's going to lead to differing opinions as to what the individual, what would be in the individual's best interest as opposed to the company.
But this was realistically just a memo. This was a suggestion saying to other attorneys within the U.S. attorney system, listen, this is the way we want to go forward. You know, it wasn't like this was law passed down by the Congress.
Well, so, I don't think it was just a memo. Okay. I think it was an intentional position statement that was rendered by Ms. Yates. You know, I think that this is really just an encapsulation of their prior policy. If you had asked them, that that's what that was. But again, I think that there's greater emphasis on the individual and the investigation, and it raises a host of issues relating to investigations, when the claim is made, whether there is insurance coverage, whether this is excluded from insurance coverage, et cetera.
What will it end up doing, do you think, to insurance coverages of companies going forward? I mean, will it really, you know, change how the insurance is thought of for the company?
Well, the insurers are very proactive and really want to provide a benefit to the company. And the company generally, or the corporation generally, wants to provide a benefit to their officers and directors. It attracts new talent, and it would be considered a significant benefit. But, you know, again, it really is too soon to tell, and we're kind of out there on this issue. The companies have, in light of the Yates memo, they have taken action. There have been interpretations of policy provisions. There have been new policy language inserted to ensure against the DNOs. There have been decisions that a claim falls sooner than a claim for purposes. So what is a claim? Is a claim an inquiry? Is a claim a summons by a government agency? Is a claim when the company is actually sued or the individual is actually sued? So those kinds of issues are raised by the Yates memo.
I guess a lot of this also has really been because of the concerns of not only the general public, but obviously in some cases, the shareholders of some of these companies have really voiced their displeasure, especially when these types of instances happen. And the last thing they want to have to deal with is a massive fine, which ends up hurting their shareholder price and, you know, their value in the company that they've really bought into for so many years goes way down.
Sure.
What is the expectation then of firms like yourself? I mean, it is of like Fox Rothschild. What is the expectation that we will see with the business that you have to do? I mean, it's going to be the potential of representation is probably going to be on the rise here in the next several years.
Well, we have a very vibrant directors and officers practice, and we represent a number of officers and directors of companies in all of our 22 offices. We also have a very vibrant white collar practice. And, you know, the interesting thing is that, you know, we all work together on these kinds of things because some of them raise criminal issues and some of them are strictly civil. But certainly with regard to the Yates memo, it is a plus for law firms because, you know, individuals are really going to be lawyering up as a result of the pressure of the Yates memo.
Will there be more expectation for the companies to try and make settlements because of the Yates memo being in here?
Well, first of all, there will be more pressure for the company to indemnify the officers and directors, although there may be a movement by companies that they're not going to indemnify officers and directors.
You're on your own.
You're on your own, especially if you committed wrongful conduct. So that's kind of where it's going, I think. I think there's going to be less indemnification for wrongful acts.
I guess the expectation also would be of when somebody is potentially going to be on a board of director, that language of what their responsibilities are is changing as well.
Yes, it absolutely is.
And that then that puts even more reason, more pressure on why what we were talking about before is that the idea of going to a corporate board does have not as much luster as maybe it did a few years ago. I mean, you still it's a prestigious position to be a part of. But if you are going to be responsible, held responsible, do you want to take that step?
Well, I can tell you that I personally would look very carefully at the insurance coverage that the company had for its directors and officers, because in any significant company, you have to make sure that you are fully protected against any of the issues that the Yates memo raised.
We've seen cases of instances of wrongdoing in other corporations where seemingly what happened at lower levels of the organization, but nonetheless, the C-suite ends up being linked to it no matter what, because the expectation is there that there's no way that this could have just happened at the lower level, that the C-suite had to know at some case. That's not always the case, though.
But what you're getting is you're getting mid-level employees who are essentially diming on the upper management. Again, you have an incentive by the company to get their employees to dime on upper management. So, that's all a function of the Yates memo and the cooperation credit that the company is going to get by delivering all relevant facts to the government.
Does it help the employee a little bit having this ability to be, to be able to, I guess, in some respects, protect themselves when a situation like this comes up? Obviously, if they're involved in it, they've been involved in some level of wrongdoing to begin with, but they do have that protection against the company.
Yeah, well, not necessarily. I mean, it just that does not necessarily mean that an employee is engaged in wrongdoing, but may have facts that point to a wrongdoing by others. But again, in terms of protection, lawyering up is an obvious result from that.
But that wasn't necessarily the case if you went back 20 or 30 years. I think probably if there was a case of wrongdoing, the employee was the expectation that the employee was going to be protected by the company no
yes.
matter what?
Yes, absolutely.
So then we're talking about a major shift in how corporate and companies will probably end up having to do business going forward, because not only do they want to protect themselves against the wrongdoing, but they want to, in some respects, protect themselves against their own employees.
Exactly. I'm not sure it's really such a major shift. I think that over time it just has been shifting in that way. It would be a major shift from 30 years ago, but over time and over the recent past, there really has been a focus on individual accountability, and companies want to do the right thing as well.
Right.
So I think this is all working out. We're going to see where this memo takes us and where the DOJ, SEC, where they're going to go with some of these points, which clarify the DOJ's position with respect to individual accountability.
But again, how powerful, and again, it's still working itself out, but again, seemingly from the outside, this does have the potential to be a very powerful kind of move in terms of dealing with instances of wrongdoing within the corporate community.
Oh, I would agree with that.
Great to have you in here. Thank you very much. Nice
Thank
to meet you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Stephanie Resnick from Fox Rothschild here in the city of Philadelphia.
For more business news and analysis from Knowledge at Wharton, please visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.